Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. You didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house, I would buy you a house. And if I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, buy you furniture for your house, maybe a nice Chesterfield or an ottoman. And if I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you car, a nice Reliant automobile.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Jim Waller on the board. I don't know what he's doing over there. I didn't get an okay, but evidently we're okay. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 11. We have our guys.
We have a full house.
We have a full house. We have Wayne and Andrew. Good. Hey, guys, how are you?
I am here.
We don't normally do a lot of local news. We just had a pretty serious mass shooting here in Chicago this morning. You know, just another one. Well, this one, 18 people, 4 dead, is kind of a lot. A rapper, somebody went by in cars and just shot up everybody walking out the door. Where do we find these people?
Yeah, it's starting to look like an episode of, the movie Mad Max comes to mind.
Yeah. Interesting. I had to do some traveling last weekend and met some people from different parts of the country and actually different parts of the world. And a couple of people were very progressive Democrats. And I said, despite the bleep show that's going on in Washington, in my opinion, and wherever these people are taking us, which is me, to not an America I want at all. Anybody who thinks the Democratic Party, as is something to flee back to. But these people still don't get it. They think they got it all figured out. And what's changed there? I mean, there's a reason why this guy is in office, and it's because of the Democrats, in my opinion. But that's, just one person's view. Anyway.
Well, I think a lot can be said for, I think some of the Democratic higher ups, gray beards. Some women you could add to that too, are too steeped in the past. They still talk in terms of sending out. We're gonna send out mailers to. It seems like they're really slow to get onto this new digital age, and I think in some races they paid the price for that.
Well, I think I talk about being slow to be in a digital age. I know I can look in the mirror and see myself like that, but I don't see, let's put it this way. I hope I don't see a future where everything is a two-word insult back and forth, where someplace, somewhere, somebody actually has to write something down and make sense, or either speak like they make sense. I mean, I'm hoping this is somewhat of a phase, not the communication part, but that someplace, somewhere, somebody will actually write down what they plan on doing, who they are, and can't be insulted by a two-liner where everybody just believes two lines and doesn't dig any further. I mean, that's a recipe for, I can't even imagine what that's a recipe for long-term.
I think it's a recipe for eventually we're going to be paying homage to our artificially intelligent masters.
Well, yeah, I mean...
I noticed one of the issues, and I don't think it got much attention in this big, beautiful, beautiful Bill or big ugly Bill, whatever you want to call it, is the fact that there were some regulations on AI, and apparently, you know, the Trump administration had all those removed. So I don't know. We may be facing this George Orwell dystopian future a lot sooner than anybody thought, with potentially AI making decisions on healthcare issues, for example.
Well, we have a we have several gentlemen on the show, and one of our dudes is probably the furthest along in computer computer knowledge, claims that all this stuff about AI, it's the thing still can't think. Nothing can. I mean, it can access stuff faster. It can put things together, but it still can't. It can't think, and people think it's going to, because it's just it's not a revolution. It's just a continual advancement in processing speed and storage speed. Once in a while, or storage capability. You know, once in a while, the storage holds everybody back. And then the next year, or 2 years, it's the processing capability. But right now, what AI does is skim the hell out of the internet and give you the answer. Well, if the internet they're skimming is no good, it has no ability right now to essentially fact check what it says. I use it whenever you use it. You kick up Google and there's an AI thing there. But I always go deeper. And I'm saying 40% of the time it's dead ass wrong.
Yeah, that's true. And It, to me, it seems like it's just a glorified search engine.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's.
I remember back in the year 2000, I found myself at a meeting in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, which is right smack in the middle of where a lot of the intelligence agencies and their contractors are located. And I was invited to a meeting on where the world would be in 2020. Now, back in 2000, 2020 to me sounded like, oh man, this is like, what are you talking about, the Jetsons here? And you know, now it's 2025, of course. And I was there that I was working for a public advocacy organization called the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington on issues related to digital privacy. And I was there listening to all these other area experts. And then there was one guy who was the AI guy. And he said, yeah, we were working on AI, but we found out that we're working with some sort of robotic arm. And it was powered by some very, I guess, primitive AI type engine. What this guy said is, we try to teach it, we throw a ball at it, and we try to teach it to grab the ball, and we're unsuccessful. He said, we've realized what we have to do with AI is treat it like a child, and have it go through an education process. And not just like expect it to do something because we're programming it to do that. And I sort of found that fascinating.
What we do have Andrew, right?
Oh yeah, he's here.
He's up there. He is.
He's still sleeping up there in D.C.
Well, what goes on in Washington always never ceases to amaze me, and certainly really since the. You know, the Cheney trading his own stock stuff, which you weren't supposed to be able to do. I mean, the last few presidents, and this guy probably the most, has basically challenged everything to the point where there are no rules. It doesn't. But I'm very stunned at what this lady in Alaska was able to pull off on this bill for her boat. How can you have a countrywide policy towards food stamps and say, if you want my vote, it doesn't apply to my state? I would never have dreamed, as the dumb little Catholic kid from the South Side, I wouldn't even think of that. How's that even, well, I won't say legal, because they're the ones making the laws, but how the hell can that even happen?
Well, it's simple. It's a targeted, call it bribe or incentive. And it's happened before. There's some famous stories of Lyndon Johnson doing it. But here's a difference. Back in those days, it really wouldn't have been covered that much, except in very isolated newspapers, whereas now we get to read about it through electronic communications. So Johnson did some of the same things on big bills when he was Senate Majority Leader. Here we look at it, and if we dig down in that situation, Lisa Murkowski, the helping out the whaling boats, and some other things. On the one hand, it seems totally shocking, and if you look at the pictures of her face when she was coming out of the meetings and her words, she knew she had hurt badly the rest of the country to help her constituents get a carve out. And we know about it now. But a deeper element of this is if you look at what she actually got, it wasn't that much. So that doesn't make it better conceptually, in my view. I mean, she was bought off to help herself and some of her constituents, but it was a lot of people up in Alaska are still going to be badly hurt by this, and she voted for it.
Well, I understand. Well, I guess I understand the lady in Arizona saying she wouldn't give the vote to the Democrats if they didn't pull the carry interest piece out of the Biden tax bill, and I think that was a pretty horse bleep thing to do, but at least it covered everybody. I just never dreamed that America, somebody would walk in and say, well, you know, I'll vote for this bill, except I don't like the capital gains tax increase. So how about making it so in my state it doesn't go up? And somebody's saying yes. I can't even imagine that happening, and yet it seems to have.
Well, they tried to hide it a little bit because they didn't use the word Alaska in there. They said non-contiguous localities. So put that in your put that in your word blender. Non-contiguous. I think it might cover Hawaii with that language, but that's why they're doing this stuff in the middle of the night, so that, you know, people are voting on it and the constituents don't hear.
Well, if we had a judiciary, how does somebody not say this isn't legal? Just like having two different tax rates. What's the difference?
Well, the Supreme Court just basically did say it's legal because they made this ruling on birthright citizenship where they said, well, a judge's decision in one district doesn't apply across the rest of the country. And we could have a situation very soon, or probably right now, where you lose your birthright citizenship if you're in Texas, but you have it if you're in California. I mean, so you got two different policies on becoming a U.S. citizen or maintaining your U.S. citizenship. I mean, how can you call this the United States with, you know, policies like that?
We've morphed from you know, criminals that came across the border, you got to get them back, to anybody who's been here 30 years and somehow isn't a citizen, they're all our enemy now. What is the hair up Trump's ass that makes him think all these people have to, what do they ever do to him? I mean, this is almost like personal.
I think it's more Stephen Miller, Svengali, Joseph Goebbels, Himmler, all wrapped up into one. Stephen Miller, you go back to, there's videos of him at his high school, Santa Monica High School in California, where he's ranting and raving about janitors who are, would obviously be Hispanic out there, not picking up the garbage thrown on the, you know, the lawn at his high school. He's saying, why do we have to pick it up? We got these Mexicans to do it. So we've got basically a long-term, I wouldn't say racist, but more of a racialist. Because in Miller's mind, there are the people we keep, and then there's the people we get rid of based on race, creed, color, religion.
What, you know, we're talking about this shooting here in Chicago. This all kind of ties together. To me, this is somewhat of a, I don't know, guys, if it's a, help me with this. It's somewhat of a, you know, I'll say a progression of some sort, and I don't know what the sort is. We go from a time when it seemed like most people worked, pretty much everybody worked, and now we have last month, and we'll see the numbers today. Last month was a record number of people not working, either, you know, when I say legitimately, in you know, it's a big word, in school, retired, or something. And for some reason, we have an economic knowledge in this country that to me is so remedial, I can't even go there. But, and we'll look at it later, and I'm sure you guys look at the numbers, but there's people that are eligible for the workforce. There's really four numbers that make sense here. There's people that are eligible to be working, essentially over a certain age and something. There's people who are actually employed. There's people that are unemployed looking for work, which is very hard to figure out. And the cheat there is, if you're getting an unemployment check, we figure you're looking. If you're not, you're not, which is insane. Then there's a huge chunk of people that aren't working and we don't know what they're doing. We're assuming some are retired, some are students, and those kinds of things. And the rest of them, we don't know what they're doing. That number really should be combined, because you really don't know who's looking for work and who isn't. And the number is like 109 million people, of which 7 million we think are really looking for a job, and we don't know. Anyway, last month, that number is, you know, a record number. But you see what the Trump's policies are doing here, and you can say, well, you know, they're horrible, they're this and they're that. But I look at it, and you guys maybe do too, I don't know, I'm not leading the witness here, but it seems like it's somewhat of a progression to where we go from times when everybody's supposed to be doing something, people only get, I'll say, benefits of any kind unless they're like really sick or really something. And we, you know, we spend money on education, we expect people to get out of high school and be able to get a job or go to college. Now the amount of money in one group takes over, and we seem to do more and more money in some areas without really caring about the outcome. And now you have this kind of almost seemingly, hopefully not permanent, but damn near permanent, like underclass, where it seems like no matter how much money you throw at it, you're not gaining anything because it's done improperly. The families are all busted up. It's just, I mean, it's like shootings last night. Now you got a group that comes in and says, "Well, we tried all that. Now we're just going to cut them off." And there's let's put it this way: I'm not agreeing with it, but I understand it. I mean, I understand it. I mean, if you look at the Chicago situation, we're up to $22,000 a kid we send to Chicago high schools, and yet the reading scores are like sixth grade or eighth grade or something. I mean, if I'm somebody in the state, I'm not just saying white, anybody who sits there and goes, the solution just can't be more money. Something else has to happen here. I don't think they're wrong there, do you? I mean, how they're going about it maybe is a little not really my style, but to say, look, the idea that if I just gave you 25 a kid with the same crap going on, that somehow the outcome will be different, those people aren't wrong, are they?
Well, you started the show with the gang violence, then we moved to Democratic politics and complaints about that. And I think there is a link, although we didn't really explore it a few minutes ago.
Andrew, in my mind, it's all linked together all the time, so I never really shift subjects in my mind,
if that makes any sense. I think the link is grievance, chip on the shoulder. And so somebody insults somebody on their turf or they're at the nightclub or somebody thinks the solution is they're all ticked off in politics, and the common thread is I'm mad, I'm upset, I got grievances, and I'm going to do something about it. And that's not the way to run a civic culture, including in high school, where people might intimidate the teachers and what have you. So that's what I think is the thread. And what the solution is for people to chill out, but they're not going to chill out if they're feel entitled or they got grievances. So anyway, that's easy to identify the problem, harder to identify solutions.
Andrew, how much, I mean, we have obviously different points of view on the show, and mine, unfortunately, but it's always constant, is I always tie a lot of this stuff back to economics. And I've seen really a 25-year period, maybe more, where 80% of the people aren't gaining. And below the skin, not very far, whether you're left or you're right, you're somewhat angry about it. I mean, you'll see people, you know, executives moving stuff overseas, and all of a sudden they're making 10 times what they did 10 years ago, and nobody else has a job, or nobody else gets a raise, or it's there's this undercurrent, I'll use it almost, of rage on either side. And then you have whole sections of the population that don't even have a job. And now you've got, you know, some bill coming through to say people have to work 20 hours a week, which, by the way, in theory, I sort of agree with. But the second thing is, where are they going to go? Who's going to hire them? I mean, it's sort of like there's a, I'm really going off the deep end. There's a thing here in Illinois, I'm sure you guys know about it, that in the Constitution, it says that you can't decrease anybody's pension. Now, that was put in there, I think, so you couldn't threaten judges and people. But actually, it's morphed into, if you can cheat the system even for a day and get like a double pension, you're good to go. They can't come after you. So it's morphed into something more. And I read a couple of lawyers, and you guys know all about lawyers. And one guy said, well, this thing is a very foolproof piece of the Constitution. It would take an amendment to change it, or a constitutional convention. Yeah, somebody else wrote, the whole thing's BS. Because the state can say you can't lower somebody's pension, but they're not saying who's supposed to pay it if you can't afford it. And if they don't, if they're not going to cover it, then they really can't have a law like that. I mean, so it seems like there's two sides to everything these days, isn't there? I mean, there always was, I suppose, but...
Well, certainly that's the case, and you get... I think there's some joke about small-town lawyers. Sleepy little town, let's call it, in the Midwest. They had one lawyer, he didn't get any business, and a second lawyer comes in, and people think, well, it's really going to cut into the first lawyer's business. And no, it explodes, because now everybody's suing each other.
I mean, there seems to be, if there's a solution, there's somewhere in the middle here, but it's not... The Democrats, let's just pour money into the system. It really goes back, and you guys remember this, I mean, the stark difference between Johnson's war on poverty, where you have all these programs, you pour all the money into it, and I'm going to say at best 30% made it to the people that are poor, and the joke at the time was if you divided the amount of people into the amount of money and sent them a check, you wouldn't have any poor people. And then a few years later, you had Tricky Dick's negative income tax. And, you know, whether people think there's moral hazard to that or there isn't, it's two amazingly different looks at a solution. And we're still almost fighting that battle today, aren't we?
Well, we are. And here's a big criticism of the Democratic Party that I think goes partly to it. And I think about this a lot, because I'm in downtown Washington, and we got all these parades all the time going by my office. And I'm thinking, what are these people accomplishing? And let's talk about identity politics. And let's say gay pride marches where people have the most outlandish costumes. I'm circling around to your point, or as Trump would say, I'm doing the weave. People want to express their identity in ways that are sometimes designed to shock, but that makes them feel good. But how does that advance a larger agenda? And when people are electing people, they say, well, we want people who look and act like ourselves. But where's the public service component to this? Where's the problem-solving component? And so that's why we have these increasingly divided views of things. Instead of getting administrators who say, all right, we're going to do an audit of this anti-poverty or homeless agency or whatever to make sure the money's going to the right people. Instead, people are running it with a chip on their shoulder. Or conversely, let's cut out all the money to all of these bums and they can go to hell. So that doesn't make for a good civic culture either.
Yeah, but I guess somewhere, maybe it's the education system, you know, how the hell do you fix that? Maybe it's something, but you look at the people that have been elected in the last, and it's from both sides, and it's not just the individual people. I don't know much about the history of the guy who just got elected in New York. Maybe you guys can maybe dig into that a little bit for me, because I don't know. But you look at Trump, you look at Mayor Johnson here in Chicago, it's almost like it's a popularity contest to where, you know, the skill set. Does anybody even have an idea of what a resume of somebody who has a, you know, 150,000 people working for him and has a budget of $10 billion, what his background, his or her background ought to be? I mean, we're not talking about, you know, Franklin Roosevelt. We're not talking about even Herbert Hoover, who was a brilliant man, or Bill Stevenson, who read a Victorian novel a day. I mean, we're nowhere near the mental class of like a Churchill or somebody like that, and nobody seems to care. They honestly don't even know what I'm talking about when I say this.
Well, here's something. I've come out of the shadows to grab the mic here, but there's at least one other thing I want to say. It's a demonstrated record of public service is what we need in a public service mentality. And here's the analogy I used when I ran an organization. It was a trade association called the Wireless Communications Association. And a lot of the jobs were basically serving the members, helping run conventions and so forth. And the point I'm trying to make is, one of the things I found, which was a great litmus test on hiring young people, was had they ever worked in the hospitality industry and did they like it? And so here's why that was helpful. If people have been a waiter or waitress or something like that, and they liked the concept, and they were also smart, then that was a great omen for giving them a chance to start their careers in a more professional setting and watching them grow. But if they had that job and they didn't like it, then you've got all kinds of problems. And if we apply that, if to the extent that that theory is right, and I found it was right, apply it to people who want jobs in a public service or politics or appointments.
Well, do you think I think some business background, and I think part of, you know, Trump's disdain for government is well-founded, because he was on the other side. You know, I tell you what, if somebody ever granted me a spot at the SEC or at the, I won't say the Oval Office or someplace or other, boy, I tell you what, the regulators better watch out. I mean, I've been under this thing for however many years, and the imbalance of how they treat the big people versus the little people, and how if you're big enough, you do whatever you damn well please. But they think that Trump was a kid compared to what I would do.
I I agree. I've got another anecdote, but do you have a break coming up before?
We'll just keep going. There's nothing going on before these numbers. Okay, S&P so futures are up 3, NASDAQ futures up 12, so we're sleeping here. So, go.
Okay, so here's a little bit of news, and it's brought by a blogger named Judd Legum, and he reports, and this goes to appointees in the civic culture. And just to be clear, I wasn't talking about hiring all waiters and waitresses for big business government jobs. I'm talking about the mentality.
Well, you got AOC. You got AOC service. There. AOC was a bartender, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. But here's the news. So reported today is that the FCC has dramatically knocked out regulation of phone calls from prisons. And this is a huge thing to the early contributors to the Trump campaign, which is for-profit prisons. And now prisoners, the rates where they call their family go way, way, way up. And here's connecting the dots. Some people might say, well, why should the FCC regulate the rates that private prisons call prisoners? Let's get rid of regulation. But the flip side, and the reason the rule was in there, is you got people you're trying to ultimately bring back to society and not have be totally ticked off and have them come back maybe to a family situation. And if they can't afford to call them because it's, you know, 60 cents a minute or whatever, then when they get out, everybody's going to be disconnected, ticked off, and the people that benefit are the private prisoners.
Oh, without a doubt.
Why shouldn't our regulators say, look, let's look at the big picture and not just help the campaign contributors, but try to make sure that when these guys get back on the streets of Chicago, they're not hair trigger gun nuts killing people right and left.
Do you guys always know all of this stuff? Do you know what the deal is here in county jail?
What?
And on phone calls?
What?
If I don't know.
Oh, you're asking.
Yeah.
Well, here's the difference. If it's private prisons, as of now, they can charge whatever they want, which is huge. If it's run by elected officials, particularly in Chicago, they're maybe going to hold down the costs at Cook County, except if they contract it out to the private sector without telling the private sector, look, you got to keep these phone call costs fairly low because we want people to have family ties even when they're in prison, so when they get out they feel like members of a community, not just career criminals.
Well, we had two quick stories. Out of county jail, I don't know what the cost is for somebody to make a phone call. But if you make a phone call out, the phone call's taped. They can listen in. Right. So.
Well, that's good, I guess.
But if you want to call your attorney, which is privileged, you have to. The attorney has to set up a certain number where they can call him, with a like an 800 number or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the charges on that are huge. You know, it's 30 cents a minute or half a buck a minute or something like that. So my attorney buddy, who actually has all these guys that he defends in county jail, his phone bill every month is immense from people calling him. We'll be having a beer together, and all of a sudden his phone will go off, and he goes, it's the jail. So somebody calling from the jail, reversing the charges to him. How's that for a deal? Attorney-client privilege at a price.
Well, I guess it makes sense. I'm thinking of a movie I recently rediscovered, Carlito's Way. Has everyone seen it?
I've heard of it. I have not seen it. I should probably.
Oh, it's very powerful, and there's clips on YouTube. But basically, this lawyer, Sean Penn, he thinks he's going to outwit the mob guy who's in prison by taking his bribe money and keeping it. And the mob guy has a different view of things. The mob guy's paid off the prison people, and it doesn't go well for the crooked lawyer. But that's high-end corrections entertainment. But we got 2 million people behind bars now, and we got to figure out how to handle these.
And that number is going to go up because in this big beautiful bill nonsense, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, gets a huge increase in their budget, which will make them the largest federal law enforcement agency.
Wayne, where are they getting these guys all of a sudden?
Oh, they're picking them up. They're filling quotas. Stephen Miller said, "I want so many arrests per day." I think he actually said like 3,000, because there's like millions of people here. But now with birthright citizenship being an issue, we may see we've already seen it. U.S. citizens have already been detained and deported. And listening to Trump the other day down at the Alligator Alcatraz, DeSantis's ridiculous thing, which is now all flooded out in the middle of the Everglades, we're going to see the possibility, because Trump said, look, he even told this guy from El Salvador, the president, in April, we want to get rid of our home grounds. And now we hear that maybe even natural-born citizens could be deported, detained and deported. We're talking about millions of people.
How does anybody, one thing I wanted to get a feel for, I mentioned yesterday on the air, and I, you know, I mean, it doesn't make it, because it's on the air, doesn't make me maybe right or wrong. I made the statement that if you wanted me to run for office or to be a judge, I don't see how anybody could do that that has a family, because the threats against you.
Yes.
I mean, you know what? If it's me, you know, have at me. I don't want to get shot in the street, but I'd rather me get shot than if I had a wife and kids.
And I think this is how Trump controls these Republicans in Congress. Look, all you got to do is look at what happened in Minnesota.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. I mean, how this guy in Carolina put the nay vote in on this, and now he's not running again. I think he figures he's not doing, you know, Congress is not what he thought it was going to be, where people actually give a crap about doing the right thing. It's fighting back and forth on both sides, and he's like, I don't need this. I don't want somebody coming in and wasting me and my wife and kid and dog and stuff. I mean, I think the fear factor is way up.
Oh, it is. And you know, we already know there's U.S. or federal judges and other judges that are getting, you know, pizza docs, they call it. The pizzas are showing up at their home, and they're being sent there because somebody is sending them a message. Hey, I know where you live. And then they put the name of the person who called in for the pizza is the name of one of their kids, so it's pretty obvious what's going on. See, Stephen Miller and Trump or any of these characters, they don't have to do this themselves. They know that there's these whatever you want to call it, this, you know, there's neo-Nazis, there's white nationalists, there's involuntary celibates, incels out there that are more than willing to do this without taking any actual direct orders from the administration. And as long as they know these people are out there, they know that they've got this group that will basically act like a brown shirt. The brown shirt.
Once this starts, and I don't think anybody can, well, you can get a real Trumper that'll say this isn't happening at all, it's all our imagination. Once this starts, how do you stop it?
I'm afraid we're already down that path. You know, there's this guy named Joshua Aaron who created this ICE alert application for your phone. I tried to download it, but I have to get a new iPhone to do it because I don't have enough memory in the one I got. But it gives you alerts of ice activity in your area, and these are confirmed reports, and with sometimes photographs. And now Pam Bondi, the attorney general, said, "Oh, we're looking at him. We may bring criminal charge against this guy." This isn't interfering with ICE. It's just alerting people to the fact that they're there. There's another software program I use called ICE Alert. And last night here in Tampa, there was a immigration advocacy meeting at one of the local libraries. And the report, which was confirmed, was that there were ICE vehicles circling the library, taking photos of everybody going in and out of the library.
Why don't people have a problem with this? One of the ridiculous executive orders the other day was, and this is where it's, and it, people think, you know, they think that I'm nuts because, well, maybe I am, but the idea about we're going to take the driver's license away of over-the-road truckers that can't speak English.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, wait a minute. I mean, I try and be somewhat logical here. Wait a minute. I think if somebody's going to be driving an 18-wheeler countrywide, there is some basic test where you should be able to read, you know, speed limit.
I once had to rent a car at Tokyo Airport and drive about 2 hours. And I don't understand Japanese, but guess what? All the signs, directional signs, were in Japanese. I probably shouldn't have been driving, but I think Spanish speaking truck drivers, say from Mexico, you go to Mexico, the rules of the road are about the same as they are here.
But I'm saying even if you wanted to have some remedial English test, there needs to be a remedial English test. Where Trump's idiotic order left it up to the discretion of the patrolman. I can't think of a bigger bribe or something, or somebody's ability to get something out of somebody, than every patrolman being the judge and jury on this. How does anybody in that position even think that that makes sense?
Tom, it's even worse than that. Here in DeSantis, here in Florida, wants to take Florida National Guard men or personnel and turn them into immigration judges to hear cases in these two detention, I call them concentration camps. The one down here at Alligator, Alcatraz, and another one up at the near Jacksonville, which is a National Guard base, Camp Landing. He wants to take National Guard personnel and turn them into immigration judges.
Andrew, where did all these people become our enemies? I mean, if you came over here and you're a drug guy and you meld in with the drug people here, I guess I don't want you here. Maybe I don't want the drug guy who's here either. But how did the Polish cleaning lady who's been here for 30 years become my enemy all of a sudden? I didn't think she was.
Well, it's simple. In the good old days, people would listen to radio shows like yours, read the Chicago paper, take your pick of which one of the four you might like. But now they hear they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, and this is social media. And remember, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats.
And in Christy Noem's case, she said the other day that one of the deportees was a cannibal from Africa, and he was eating himself on the flight back to Africa.
Eating himself.
Yeah, Wayne and I were talking.
Yes.
On that, and he had a wide selection of fifth grade jokes he played on me that not suitable for your show. But
obviously, Christy Noem is still at the fifth grade level.
She's kind of out there, isn't she?
Yeah. What is this? They call her Ice Spot. The Ice Barbie, I've heard it called the Nazi Barbie, although I've heard the press secretary.
I guess I don't understand why all of a sudden somebody, are they believing, are they, is this the way they think themselves? Are they drinking the Kool-Aid, or they feel they have to act like this to be part of the group? I mean, I don't quite get it.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, do they, She can't
stop. Look at Elon Musk. He's got some concerns. They want to deport him.
yeah, and so imagine Zoran Mamdani and Elon Musk being on the same deportation plane, sitting next to each other, all shackled.
What is in regards to this? What Musk, you know, threatening to finance the other guys, the people in the Senate. I mean, as you guys obviously know, 2/3 of the people in the Senate aren't up for re-election next year, and those kind of threats, I think, kind of fall on deaf ears. However, in the House, everybody's up next November, and the House is very tentatively Republican, and those guys like their jobs. A lot of them quit. But what is the difference in political tension regarding this bill in the Senate versus the House? I think they're gonna have a tough time getting through the House with this bill. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, it seems that way. They held open the votes for hours on this, and part of the reason that they need to get it done is ICE and Homeland Security are running out of money with 3 months to go, and so all of these big plans to round up people, they don't have the money, so they need to get the huge increases passed into law. But to go to your point, there's most of the opposition is not for moderates worried about cuts to the social safety net among Republicans. It's among the ultra-right, which really wants more budget cuts. And they have a history of folding, but they say they're not going to do it this time. They probably will, because they realize at the end of the day, this is their best chance to get huge parts of their agenda done. But with Musk and his threats to fund opposition, there's well-informed analyses arguing totally different things I've read in the last day. And one, Paul Krugman says this isn't going to work. Musk is going to find out, like the rich people in Russia, that having money and that political power, he's gonna lose to Trump. And another person, another I think well-informed person, Seth Abramson, last night wrote 20 reasons why Musk will win. So you take your pick. But it's,
well, in our society, I'm no constitutional lawyer, but I read this pretty interesting article once regarding the biggest weakness in the Constitution. Well, I think the two biggest weaknesses are they never anticipated a corporation, and they never anticipated people being able to influence an election four states over. Because how could they possibly have anticipated that when you could never go four states over? But anyway, that's for another discussion. But they said they gave way too much power to the executive branch, because they knew the president would be Washington, and they figured every president after that was going to be Washington. And guess what? These people aren't Washington. Now, I'm not so sure.
Especially Trump makes Nixon look like Washington.
Yeah, but as this goes forward, and I hope it doesn't, and I hope maybe there is some moral someplace. If this goes forward and regular people are sitting there going, wait a minute. These guys are all over the place. They're hauling people out of their houses. They're wearing masks, which they are now. Oh, they just went out and seem to have got all outfitted with jack boots. Once it starts rolling down that road and the judges are all intimidated, how exactly do we stop this? I'm saying if it does, how do we stop it?
I think we all know where we go from there, but we just don't want to think about it.
Well, no, let me be a little more hopeful than I think what Wayne's implying. But by having discussions like this and saying, all right, there may be short-term consequences, there may be threats against oneself and the family, but we were not brought onto this wonderful country to just say there's nothing we can do, because there are things we can do. They may not be effective now, but part of it is just saying, no, this isn't right. And that may involve, in a very personal way, a disagreement with loved ones, neighbors, office colleagues, and just saying, no, I'm not going to do it that way. And I'll give an example from a distant state, but there is a Midwest component. There's a woman I've never met, her named Lisa Ward, who lives in Alabama, and she's from Indiana. And she, just for years that I followed her, she just says, things aren't right down here in Alabama. She's run for office, she always loses, she speaks out and so forth. And she's bringing an Indiana kind of Midwestern sensibility. She's a grandmother down there. And I'm sure she's hated by a lot of people down there in Alabama, but that's what it takes, I think.
See, I'll say one thing from your lips to God's ear. I'm going to say that the specter, and I don't know what his personal stuff is, the specter of the guy who's the outlying vote from Carolina quitting after he made the vote, to me, is way more powerful than the three of us talking. Just saying. Exactly. I wish it wouldn't be, but I got to push back on this one. If you get three or four judges going, I don't need this crap. My family's more important to me, and they get the hell out of there. I once that starts, I don't see how guys like us, you know, doing the best we can, right that ship. The power vacuum is just too much. I mean, it is.
But let's talk about the legacy, and we've talked a little bit about this before. But we're kind of in the same age, and for most of us, and many of your listeners, we had people who, in the family, volunteered for military service. Of course, Wayne is a veteran, but back in the day, that was World War II, Korean War. People were getting killed. And they didn't necessarily go in with a thought, well, now that I've joined, I get a big job in the military, and we're going to win. No, it's you know, we know what it is. It's getting in there and doing a small part that is maybe in individual circumstances, it's boring, hazardous, and irritating. I mean, think of all the comic books that came out of military service, Sad Sack, Beetle Bailey, movies, but people did it. And so we can do it again, I think.
But I guess my question is, at what cost? I mean, the man's been there 5 months, and all of a sudden we have this massive increase in a police force that people didn't even know we had. They're wearing masks, they're running around, they're doing stuff, they're showing up at churches and other places.
And many of them are bounty hunters. I just saw a report out of San Diego where, you know, these private security companies like guards and mall cops, they're throwing ice vests on them and telling them that, you know, here's the people you need to go pick up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any training or anything.
There's no training. I saw a guy, he looked like he weighed about 300 pounds. He had this ice vest on, you know, and, his gut's sticking out, and he's there with all these other ones, and I'm thinking, hey, who's he going to chase down?
I have a lot of friends and, you know, very close friends and people on the show that are convinced this is just a short-term aberration of somebody turning the bus around in a crooked Washington. And whoever did it was going to get all kinds of pushback, and you just got to keep pushing through and those kinds of things. I don't know exactly where this immigration thing fits into that, but somehow people have bought into that. But the people that are willing to let it all play out to a point, I think the people who feel this way, again, people on the show, my personal friends and maybe even a significant other, feel this way. I just wonder if they're going to let it go so far to where someday, if it keeps going, even they are going to say, this is too much. I just think that when that day comes, I don't know how we reverse it.
I was going to say, yeah, at that point, it's too late. And all we have to do is look at the history books in the 1930s in Germany and elsewhere, and even in this country.
In Russia.
Yeah.
The oligarchs were making all this money, and they thought they could stop him if he went too far. But since he made the conditions and made the laws, they're out. New people are in.
Well, I mean, you get this feeling, you know, this is, it's sort of a bizarre, talk about a real small, we only have a few minutes here, but a real small thing is one of the guy's name was Larry Bloom. I don't know if you know much about Chicago, but Larry's a Jewish guy, real nice guy. He was a pilot. He was down by you, Wayne. He used to like to fly his private aircraft. Well, the Coast Guard, I think, would pay for him his gas, or if he would go patrol a certain area while he was out flying, so they wouldn't have to do it. You know, like go out and make sure you cover this 8 square miles of the ocean, make sure nobody's dying out there. And he had to deal with the Coast Guard. Anyway, nice guy, and he was involved in the building of the CBOE, which went up under budget, on time, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Larry's a real smart guy. And Larry was on the board for a while, and so he pushed for my election to the board. He says to me, I'll support you, you got to tell me one thing. And I go, what's that? He goes, for all these years, after being so close to the place, he goes, you're a smart guy, you're much more politically savvy than I am, which I don't know if I was or I wasn't. And he goes, you got to tell me who's really running the place. He goes, I could never figure it out. Stuff just happened that nobody seemed to think of. Stuff just popped up, something, you know, because you got to let me know. And I got on the board, and for 6 years, even though I thought the people who ran the place were terrific, and I thought the membership, and it was run very well, I thought. I mean, I didn't like the fact that it was going away from, I won't say open outcry, because that was happening, but from a non-competitive marketplace to what you see now, I think is a total abortion, but that's another story. But he was right. Stuff used to pop up, and I wonder, I see what's happening with the money supply worldwide, I see with the economic policies that seem to be, these guys don't even have a clue what's going on. They just keep marching towards this, you know, this is not, it's going to sound like it, but it's not. It's, you know, people in concentration camp. We're marching toward this very fascist economic system where in every industry there's two or three firms in every industry with their nose firmly up the ass of government, which was, when I was over lecturing in Europe in Germany and Austria in 1991, I spotted it over there, and I go, God, I hope we never get like this. Where the banks had all this power, they owned the companies, everybody was beholden to somebody, and it was very, very tightly controlled. And here we're going that way, merger after merger after merger. And in every industry, there's somebody so damn big you can't touch them. And it's all kind of tied together. And what's going on in the White House is almost like a diversion to it seems to me. Am I totally off the wall here or what?
No, not my opinion. I believe that too. And I mean, what yesterday we found out Del Monte, which, what, 130-year-old company is going under because, they can't deal with tariffs amongst other things.
Well, Wayne, Andrew, who's the man behind the curtain? Is it the people that go to Davos telling all this? I mean, all in the last 6 months, 8 months, every central bank has started to increase the money supply again to where we're higher than the COVID highs, to where we're going right back into this subtly inflationary, don't tell people the CPI is going up, this subtle inflation, some people get the dough, other people don't, stock market keeps going up. We're right back into this shtick that really, in the long run, basically screws 90% of the population. I mean, who designs that system? I mean, I have enough education to see it happening, and I go, this is pre-planned by somebody. Who's the somebody?
Well, I actually did a book-length study, and the term puppet masters is the concept. And the system you're talking about goes back about 150 years. It's just becoming more refined. And we focus very much on the presidents, but what we're not thinking about is, how does this nomination process work? Who's really in early on to boost certain nominees? And then once they're in, the puppet masters like to stay in the shadows, but they're making the recommendation for the appointees. So who are the people surrounding the presidents? And I'll just give two quick examples. One, there's a book that I've got right here on my shelf, in which Zbigniew Brzezinski talks very early in the book about how he was working with something called the Trilateral Commission, and they were interviewing people that they might want to support for president in 1976. And he says, we met Jimmy Carter, that's our man. And he has that right in his book, and it's obscure book maybe, but he felt he's comfortable writing it. And that in a way has been going on a long time, but it's no one person. It's a process that we can assume is in place, but with different important people who are changing. And a problem I have, and I think Wayne has with the current one, is some of them are foreign these days.
Well, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, so when the first overseas visit by Trump is to the Saudis, and we see in the New York Times yesterday that his net worth has increased by about $8 billion since he became president. Now, of course, seven of it's cryptocurrency, but it's right in the... It's somebody thinks it's valuable.
Well, somehow... When you look at the differences, and you know, the three of us are, we've seen some of this. You see the bank mergers, to where there's three or four people that are way bigger than the law allows, and we don't seem to be able to do anything about that, right? And we know that the medical and certainly the prescription pharmaceutical companies are eviscerating the population, and Trump's not going to touch that. Okay, somehow or another, he's fixated on. And, you know, some guy who's been here for 35 years working somewhere, we got to get him the hell out of here. I mean, I don't know where he goes with that. Because, you know, the enemy of most of the people I know is their prescription drug cost, right? It's not the guy down the block. But I'm saying we're not going to, and you look at the differences, and we got a dash here, but we'll talk about it maybe next week. Look at the difference between this inflation run-up and the one in the 70s. When you had competitive banking, and now you don't. In the 70s, if you guys probably will remember, your mom, if she was like mine and always saved some dough, was able to go down to the savings and loan at a bank, and if inflation was 12%, she got 14. If you never took a hit, and if you bought something and it went down, you could get clobbered, but you never took a hit on risk-free assets. The Treasury paid more than the inflation rate. Now, this last time, in the last 5 years, the inflation rate was, I think, appreciably higher than in the 70s, at least for a 3 or 4 year period of time. Well, 2.5 maybe during COVID. Yet, the big banks were able to keep your savings rate at like 1, even though the inflation was 10. They never could pull that off in the 70s. How the hell can that even happen? And yet it did, and we got a population that's somehow fighting back and forth with their neighbor, their girlfriend, or their boyfriend, whatever. Somehow or another, we don't even address something like that. Where if somebody actually had $1 million and put it in the bank in 2020, they got 600 left in buying power, maybe. And nobody even, this can only happen if, you know, remember the John Wayne movie where they needed a diversion? Was it I don't know, where he was going after the kid that was kidnapped? What the hell name of the movie was? Big Jake or something? And he went in there and he whaps this Swedish guy on the head with the pool cue, and it didn't even bother him, and he goes, uh-oh. And as soon as the guys got out and they did what they needed to do for diversion, he says to the guy, I remember the line, says, the guy says, I guess, so the guy's beating the hell out of John Wayne. John Wayne goes, wait a minute. Have you ever been to Nacogdoches? And the guy goes, well, no. And he goes, oh, then pardon me, and walked away. Well, once he didn't need the diversion anymore. I think that all this is a diversion of some kind. I don't know who's smart enough to put this together. It isn't Trump. It certainly wasn't Biden. I mean, who's doing it?
Well, right now in Congress, I mean, we isn't going back to something we talked about a few minutes ago. The truck drivers can't speak English or whatever, or read signs, worries about that. So yesterday, one of 15 major things that happened in the country, many of them from Washington, the education department says it's cutting out $7 billion that it was going to be spending this summer and in the months ahead, $7 billion for summer school, English as a second language teaching, teaching kids with disabilities and so forth. They're not going to spend it now.
Well, Andrew,
it's decided.
Andrew, what are you missing? We're sending them back. Why do we need to spend it?
Well, but these aren't spending money for illegal aliens. These are summer school programs for people who were born here.
Are we getting rid of the birthright?
Well, we're not even talking about this is for people whose parents have been here maybe 100 years.
They're all going back. That's step five. We're only on step two.
No, but what I'm talking about is cutting school programs, $7 billion of money that was passed and authorized by Congress, and our education secretary, who comes from the world of professional wrestling, says, well, we're not going to spend it on these programs, and it's not programs for children of illegal immigrants. It's throughout the country.
I'm going to say, but their opinion is half of them aren't citizens. Screw them. I hate to even think of the fact that I could be right there, but I'm not so sure I'm not. What do you think, Wayne?
I think this administration can be summed up with a single word: cruelty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're essentially saying we've given so much money to this underclass, and it hasn't done any good. We're just cutting it all back. And it goes back to, you know, next week, guys. We'll be back at our regular time. Why don't we start this a little more historically and talk about the Kerner Commission? And by the way, which landed him in jail. him talking about, if this is in the 60s, where he said, if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to end up with this permanent underclass. And God, was he right or what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he never could even foresee an album release party for a rapper named Mellow Bucks.
Yeah, to where 18 people get shot.
Yeah, right.
All right, guys, thank you very much. It was very, very good. We're going to head over to Carl now because we're going to talk about the labor numbers today. What do you guys think on this? Carl's thinking it's going to be, I'm thinking it might be a crummy number. I think the Fed might cut next week, which won't help, but I think they might. What do you think? I'm all goofy or what?
I'm fearful that the official government statistics on anything, including the weather, we're not going to get the truth out of these guys.
By the way, speaking of which, I read something last week, or somebody sent me something, that the Defense Department is not going to allow their satellites to take weather pictures for people now or something?
That's right.
What's that all about?
I guess I got to go back to putting bear fat in jars and getting the woolly caterpillars out what the weather.
Who's thinking up all this crap?
Well, for one thing, just budget cutting, but another is it's our information, so why should the public get it? It should be for people in government and their friends, not just...
Well, I mean, without railing on Trump, why was it Biden's decision, if he made any decisions, why was it the decision of their administration to not give people money supply numbers? Obviously, some people were getting them.
Right.
Anyway, you guys, what do you got going for the weekend? You going out to be in a parade, Andrew, or what are you doing?
I'm actually working on some contracts as a lawyer at So it's not a holiday, but
you're actually working now. We know Wayne's not working. Wayne, what are you up to?
Yeah, I'm thinking about going down to Alligator Alcatraz to see if I can get a deal on some wet, but used but wet cots down there.
Now, if you get that little snake Derringer by Bond Arms, they call one the snake killer. I don't think it's good enough for an alligator, though, is it?
No, and not to mention the pythons they have.
Oh yeah, oh god. Well, did you ever see one of those the python derbies where guys go out and they get like hundreds of them out of the place?
Yeah. Now, they're now working for ICE as bounty hunters.
Oh god. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures up 18. Jimmy, we have Carl.
You do.
Carl, how are you, buddy?
Oh, Chief. All right. So you know what?
Yeah, I got a question. I got a question for you.
I've been sitting on the, on the feed here for the last hour and a quarter, and I just want to point something out. This thing with the truck drivers with the CDLs, and I could go with the rest of it, but then it would take up all of our time, and we've really got an important job to talk about, especially with the ADP thing that came out a couple of days ago. All right. Terrell, Texas, there was a crash quite recently, involving a commercial truck. Non-domiciled driver, in other words, not an American citizen, that was operating the vehicle. Who was at fault, by the way? He confessed to resetting the electronic logbooks and falsifying the bill of lading dates, which, when they're now all the trucks, by some regulations that were put in about 10 years ago, you probably see on the side of the door electronic logs. Okay, it used to be that it was done on paper and cheating was rampant.
But the Allied Van Lines, we had a whole department, all you do was keep logs.
Well, cheating was rampant, okay, because there is only so many hours you can drive and then you have to sleep. And, very good safety reasons for this, right? Falling asleep at the wheel is a bad thing.
Yeah, but if you got a girlfriend somewhere and you got to spend time there, you got to make it up somewhere, right?
Well, I'm just saying, Yeah. So anyway, one of the things that the FMCSA did quite a long time ago with the advent of computers and everything else is all this stuff's electronic now. And it's tied into the speedometer and the odometer and the truck, and therefore it's essentially impossible to cheat the number of hours that the truck's moving, all right? Well, not if you have tampered with the software so that you can reset the logs.
I'll bet you could do it.
Well, yeah. By the way, that is a really serious offense. That's an instant out of service. The company gets fined, all this. Okay, so the driver provided evidence of direct instructions from the company that hired him to alter the records. And when they looked at this and they started digging into all right, who's the company, right? Because, I mean, that's the obvious question, right, is who gave him those instructions? The guy shouldn't be driving a truck in the United States.
It's probably Ford corporations deep and God knows where.
Oh, it's better. It's a virtual office that was updated online 2 days after the crash, and it appears that the company dispatch was actually coming out of Eastern Europe. Now, this is the non-citizen trucking stuff. This is, your guys were this is a,
We never said that it's a bad idea to have people be able to at least read the signs. What I said was, the way to do it is not leave it up to the individual officer, because that's rife for bribe.
Well, hold on a minute, Chief. You're not. It's not. Leave it up to the individual officer. This is why I put a thing up on the chat.
I just read the thing the other day.
Okay. Well, guess what? The guys and gals that are in the weigh stations, all of whom are deputized police officers. Okay, that has been their compliance with those regulations has been their job forever.
I understand that.
Literally forever. Now, these days.
When was the last time you saw an open weigh station?
Oh, all time.
Never see them up here. They're all close.
All time. But here's the reason that you don't see the kinds of backups and lines that you used to see at them. They're all interconnected now within a given state. And they all have plate readers and electronic interrogators. That's what that funky looking thing is that's sitting over the top of the sign. It says whether you're going to scales or not. All right. They're all interconnected. So as it was, most of this is now automated. If you actually talk to somebody who works in one, I know somebody that works in one of these places. Essentially what happens is they read where the truck's identification from a significant distance away, well before you get to the ramp. It knows where the truck has been inspected before. It sends, every so often, every so many miles, it will send the truck down the chute, but not necessarily to the scales. And they are looking at a number of different things. It's not just compliance with weight. They're also doing things like scanning the tires for hot spots and stuff like this, because part of the what causes these crashes is guys that don't do their walk-arounds like they're supposed to in their inspections, okay? So if they see something on there, and it's machine learning, it's automated, it'll flag the truck and be, okay, pull over here, and then they'll find, and not all of this is compliance in terms of, you know, go to jail, get arrested, whatever. Some of it is just pure safety. All right, you got a tire that's running hot, dude. If you don't change that,
yeah, but you end up losing all of this or a lot of it. You're down in Tennessee. You guys don't get snow. You're a Florida, Tennessee guy now.
Oh, excuse me. We do get snow.
Oh, well, if you're up here and you're driving, all of a sudden there's all kinds of snow, and you sit there and go, why aren't these idiot truck drivers, which didn't used to be idiots, by the way, why aren't they slowing down? And the answer to that is, if you ever take, you know, the speed limit 65,
right?
If you don't have that thing set at 65 in a cruise control, if you turn that off to slow down, they're up your ass.
Well,
your company is up your ass.
Well, the trucks are governed too. It depends on the company. Okay, now I've somebody on my forum that is a professional driver. Okay, it's what he does. He and another guy are a two-man team that run cross-country trips for one of the major companies. I know exactly what it is. I won't name them. And they're one of the few that is still out there that is not, shall we say, is corrupted by the commercial stock market process as everybody else.
Can corrupted by the dollar? Where are you going to find that guy?
You know what? Their company has a better than the national average's record when it comes to on-time deliveries and safety and everything else. And they have been, their firm has been, okay, you're on the side of the road because the weather forecast is unacceptable from a safety perspective. You know, there's a huge difference between these companies that get set up in somebody's P.O. box and the ones that actually have a 100-year record, in that these guys have a much lower insurance price. Needless to say, what do you think that does? That translates into what they can charge people, right?
Well, a few years ago I did
that. But anyway, my point is simply that if you think this is like some new delegation to people who do not have any qualifications and really shouldn't be doing this
The executive order, I read the executive order. It said it, leaving it to the discretion of the policeman. It didn't say to train people in the...
I get this, but what I'm saying to you is that the people who are actually doing this, that are actually pulling people over...
You're making it sound like some policeman can't go, your English don't sound so good, by the way, that's $100. You know,
it's not Chief, that's not what it is. It's not $100, it's you're out of service, the truck gets parked, and that's it.
You're talking like a believer. I'm talking like somebody from the South Side.
I'm talking like somebody that actually knows who's doing this right now.
I'm talking about the thing. How do you know who's doing it when it came out 2 days ago?
Because this has been an issue that has been raised for the last several years.
People are
getting killed on the highway by these guys.
All I said was, I would like people to be fluent enough in English to be able to read the damn signs. I mean, I try not to be so much of a moron. But what I'm saying is there ought to be, I don't want it to be left to the discretion of the patrolman, which it sounded to me like they were doing.
Chief,
you're gonna defend them and say that's not what they meant. That's what they wrote.
No, I understand what they wrote. What I'm telling you is what's been happening is that you have corrupt Department of Transportation firms and entities within the states. They've been busted all over the U.S., in Florida, everywhere else, handing out CDLs to people who never even got behind the wheel of a truck and proved they could drive.
All I said was, the person who wrote that needs to take a second look at it. because of the way, you know, I mean, because that's not what you want to have happen.
Look, I want every one of these people who are, they are, these companies are being set up and are doing this for the explicit purpose of suppressing wages and screwing American truck drivers.
Whatever. I mean, I know a lot of you guys are into that. What I'm saying is,
it's being done because they're cheaper, and by the way, they're unsafe. Now, if it's just a cheaper thing, we can have an economic debate about it. But the fact of the matter is that during these storms, 80% of these crashes are being caused by these drivers.
I would say the last time I was, foolishly, for the show, things I do for the show, there was a guy who owns a station here in Chicago that actually is a 10,000-watt circular sound, which people don't know what I'm talking about. It's a pretty good, especially at our time in the morning when we're half dark in the wintertime.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a pretty strong station.
Yeah.
And the guy, you know, was so adamant that he wanted to sell it for a price that, you know, whatever, whatever.
Right.
So I said, I made an appointment with the guy, and I drove up to Detroit. Now, this is back when I would go to Detroit and back in the same day. I don't know if I do that now. But I probably foolishly shouldn't have done it then. So I drive up there and leave at the, you know, crack of dawn like I'm up anyway. I get up there and I meet this guy, and let's just say Carly was quite the piece of work. I tell you, all I kept thinking about,
why am I surprised?
Why did I drive all the way up here? And the guy's like, I need this to be on the air. And I go, how about this? Why don't we start here? Because let me help you. You got nobody now. I'm not trying to screw you. I'm saying you've got no studio. I'm going to have to do that. You've got no website. I'm going to have to do that. I mean, why don't we kind of work this together? We'll try and be your horse in the morning, and we'll fill people in later. Let's try and do something with this.
Right.
Here's what I want for you, like some outrageous number. I go, for what? I mean, I got to do all the work. I mean, it didn't work out.
Yeah, these people are...
So I'm driving back, and, you know, I'm on 994, and the trucks are all going 65 or 70.
Which is a shitty road, by
the way. They're all going 70, which is the limit. Yeah. And I'm going, you know, 75. I'm going a little faster than I'm not a lead foot dude. And all of a sudden, it starts to snow, which I don't need after driving this whole length of time.
Yep,
and now it's really coming down. So I'm sitting there, and I've got a four-wheel driver with decent tires. And I'm in the right lane going, you know, and the right lane has, you know, the ruts in it. And the left lane is just all snow.
Right.
Now I'm going 50, maybe.
And you got trucks blowing by.
And all of a sudden, they're blowing by me at the exact... And I'm sitting there... These bleeps, they got the cruise control on.
Chief, I know, and it's stupid, and I understand why it's done, and it's, the log pressure is...
Hey, we're going to have to go to break here because I want to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, what is a civic leader? I mean, these new terms, I don't know what these people are. I don't know what I'm not sure what a community organizer is, if that's a real job, but now I'm looking at this board of directors somebody sent me to. All these people are civic leader. Does that mean you got enough money to donate and you put your fanny in a board seat? Is that what a civic leader is? What is that?
Oh, I think it's probably, well, why don't we just rename them to what they really are, bribe recipients?
Yeah, I mean, I'll bribe for board seat. I mean,
I don't even know
what these jobs are. Mike Royko, the long deceased Mike Royko, in one of his columns, he said, you know, if I ask somebody what he does for a living, and he can't tell me in three words, I think the guy's something wrong with him. He, all of a sudden, he's some kind of crook. If he can't say, I fight fires, I build houses, I manage money, I can't... If he can't do that, if it's some kind of a long, esoteric thing about, I consult, I do this, that, the other thing, you know, I whatever it is, if I get some long conversation, I immediately know I don't trust this guy.
Royko is right, by the way, but yeah.
This week, futures up 6, Nasdaq up 18. We come back, we should have this labor number.
Yep.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Email the show 24 hours a day at stocksandjocks@live.com or give us a call, 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257.
Hey, Jimmy, if you're going to play this commercial, you've got to figure out how to get into Stocks and Jocks Live.
The letter N, Jocks, and be sure to friend the chief, Tom Howe, on Facebook. Stocks and Jocks, Monday through Friday mornings on 7:50 a.m. in Chicago in Northwest Indiana.
We had a Candace commercial because we don't have it. We're not on a station anymore.
7:70 a.m. in Chicago Heights, or you can stream us live at stocksandjocks.net.
Well, that works.
Back.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm out. Jimmy on the board. They got a commercial from like 15 years ago, but Matt Weber always has a good voice, doesn't he? Just saying.
Well, you know, yeah. And we got back, 30 seconds before the numbers hit, so I actually don't have it yet. I'm sitting here with a refund.
I still got us something 29 here, but let me.
I got the May report still pops up when you hit the refresh. So yeah, you know, in about another 10 seconds that will change. But
what do you make of the? First of all, what's your connection? Everybody's got a different view of this.
Oh, wait, we just got it.
ADP versus the other one. Belay that question until after. We'll worry about that later.
All right. 140, so establishment survey, 147 in June, unemployment at 4.1. So that is down a tick on the official rate. Let's see, job gains occurred in state government health care, federal government lost jobs. Yeah, there's, maybe sort of, it's a doji thing, supposedly, right? Let's see what else I got here. It'll take me a minute to update the thing, but let me just go through, like, the top line deal here a little bit. Government employment rose by 73,000 in June.
All DEI guys.
But wait a minute now. Hold on a minute. State government by 47, driven by education. Now remember, ADP said that education and healthcare, that category, which they put together, which I don't quite understand why, but they do, was a negative. This says no. This says that it went up by 40,000.
Who do you believe? ADP is the one who gives out the paychecks, right?
Healthcare also said plus 39, according to the establishment survey. So that's 79,000 jobs, which, that's a little crazy because that's, if you think about it, 79,000, well, that's, it's better than half, right, of the whole. So who do I believe? Well, as I've pointed out, ADP, you really can't. If you placed a wager in one of those betting markets on the ADP number, you'd lose. That's kind of like the inverse Kramer thing, right? If he says to buy something, short it. If he says to sell it, buy it.
Well, let me ask the million-dollar question regarding ADP. You would think that if it just was, since ADP does 40% of the payrolls in the country?
Yeah, they do a lot of it.
I don't think it's 50, but it's close.
It's big, yeah.
I mean, if they come out and say, just flat-ass, guess what? We wrote 100 million paychecks last month. This month we're writing 101, it looks to me like a million people are getting a paycheck that weren't getting it before. But then they ran into all kinds of issues where they weren't matching the Bureau of Labor number, and I think, and this is where I'm the question I'm asking, didn't they start to do some adjustments to try and predict where the other one was, and now it's not the clean number out of them anymore?
You know, I don't know. This is one of the...
This is what I've heard. This is what I've heard. That's why I'm asking.
Well, this is... I've heard... What I've heard and what I can prove and document are two different things. What I do know is that ADP, not all that long ago, shifted how they fund and who they partner with for the day, with analysis and things like this. And that they were public about, that they did, right? That they did that. their claimed reason was to improve the accuracy of their statistics. I don't know how you improve accuracy beyond counting the number of checks you cut and the size of the checks. I'm not entirely sure how difficult it is to issue a statement to a database and query how many checks did you cut?
Yeah, it's
it seems to me that if I say, count the number of checks, that one's kind of simple. If I say count the number of unique Social Security numbers they were issued for, because, of course they have that too, right? Because they have to send in the employment taxes. That one's pretty hard to argue with. The non-adjusted number, quite interestingly, is plus 482. Okay, so now that I've had the 30 seconds to put it into the computer here, the 12-month run rate is plus 2.1, the other interesting number is that the reality is that it's negative on a growth perspective, however, quite largely because according to non-adjusted household survey, 927,000 people came off the couch last month. Now, I'm not entirely sure why, it is.
You're talking on the adjusted one.
I'm doing non-adjusted like I always do. I'm not changing what I'm doing.
Okay, I'm doing the.
I'm saying we went from 103.
I know. I'm on the idiot page that they want all the idiots to look at. I get it.
That's the one they want you to look at. But they went from 103.169 on not in labor force to 102.242 this month. So that is a big problem.
Well, the adjusted number is exactly the opposite.
I understand that the adjusted number went from 102.875 to 103.204.
All right. So here,
which is why I don't use it.
But this is okay. But my one thing. There's a few things you can take. Maybe a few things you can take as, I won't say gospel from me, but this is absolutely the truth. The first class economics, I think I was taking labor economics at Notre Dame. I walked in and the guy says, out of all the numbers you see, the most useless number is the unemployment rate.
Well, yeah. But employment population ratio is probably the most important number.
And it's unchanged, according to this.
Well, no, on the unadjusted, it's up 2 ticks. Increase 2 ticks.
All right. Well, here we have.
I know. I'm just.
Okay, but my point is, I'm trying to take 2 or 3 months in a row, so I don't get the. In the last 2 months, we've got a million more people. Again, now 2 months. I think the adjustments. I'm still not as good as the one you're looking at. I get that. In the last 2 months, I got a million more people in the column. We don't know what they're doing. We actually have less people unemployed looking for a job. And if you believe that,
right.
I got a bridge for you. So we actually have, according to the last 2 months household survey, we have 600,000 less people working and a million people more in the we don't know what they're doing column. That's not a real good deal. Even if you go back 3 months, we still have less people working. We have less people. We haven't had an increase in people working since February, according to this thing, and we've got almost a million more people in the we don't know what they're doing column. And somehow or another, we're thinking there's less people actually looking for a job, so the unemployment rate is going down, not up, which is insane because there's more people not working.
Well, yeah, the other thing, so there's two numbers that, as I point out every time I do the show with you. The employment population ratio is if you only read one number, you only calculate one thing out of there, that's the one you want to look at, because it tells you all about long-term fiscal stability of the country. And it's up 2 ticks, but it's at 59.9. And historically, where it ought to be is around 62, 63.
You got to get a little closer to the mic, bud. You're fading here.
I'm saying, dude, it needs to be somewhere around 62, 63 in order for us to have fiscal stability of any kind in the country, okay? And you'd think that that's, it's a couple percent. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that every tick in there is 600,000 people.
And,
one tick
well,
is 600,000.
I got us, whenever it gets below 60, I really get worried. And now it's 59.7. for 2 months in a row, according to this thing. What do you got on the other page?
Well, I got 59.9, but still, yeah. It's bad. The other thing is that the population adjusted 12-month run rate, which is the other one that you have to compute because they don't give you that one. They don't want you to read that. I wonder why. It's only been 100% accurate predictor of severe economic dislocations. It's only gone off twice in the last 30 years, and both times it did, we had a really bad thing happen. I'm leaving the crazy out because you couldn't have anticipated that one, okay? But the other two, 2000 and 2008, and that is neg 3.03 million right now, and is, while it came back a little bit, it was at neg 3.377 last month. This is sewer level bad, okay? So there is no indication that this is flattening out at all. This is an extraordinarily negative number. The thing that that is interesting about this is that from this BLS number, anyone that thinks that Powell is going to turn around and make a rate change is out of his mind. And secondly, especially when you look at the at the PCE indicator.
Back up on that here.
Yeah.
I, as you know, nothing frustrates me more than people, instead of looking at monetary numbers, they look at this interest rate and the politics and the back and forth.
Right.
I mean, when somebody, whether he doesn't even know what's going on or whatever, somebody all of a sudden jacks the money supply growth up from 4.5 to pushing 6, and then refuses to have the announcement that he's lowering the rate. He is lowering the rate. Does he not even know that?
Well, remember that the biggest power that the Fed has is actually not influencing rates. It's running their mouth because people believe
them. Well, but I'm saying, is he going to run the funds rate down to 4 and just not tell us? I mean, what are we doing?
Well, I mean, is he going to? Well, I don't know. The IRX is sitting at 4.223 and it really hasn't moved.
Well, I've got the last two money supply months of money supply we're pushing 6% on a yearly basis. That's incredibly inflationary, especially in a time when we're not doing much growth.
It's stupidly inflationary, and oh, by the way, the long end is up 1%. The TNX is up 1%.
Well, that's what that's what somebody there is worried about. If we pour more money into the system, we're going to drive the low rates, the short-term rates down as Trump is bleeding that he wants. Yet all we're going to do is give everybody this inflation shock where the long-term rates are going to go up. Anyway, Carl, before we wander off, what Carl's talking about on these numbers, and we're not trying to give everybody crazy here with the math. When I think the both of us, can I ever say we're agreeing on something, Carl? But when the both of us think that things were a little more healthy, let's say, in 2000, the amount of people working versus the amount of people not working was 64.4%, which means, I'm not saying everybody in the other column is being paid for by somebody else. A lot of people are students, a lot of people retired, and they got plenty of dough. They don't need anybody's dough. But the point is, that's how many people are essentially working versus the rest. Well, since from the employed number from 2000 till now has gone from 137 to, say, 163. So it's up. I do the math there. It's 25 million people, right? Essentially, are more working. 26 million people.
Yeah.
But the amount of people that aren't working have gone from 70 to 103. They've actually gone up 33 million people.
Right. So
if that happens again in the next 25 years and we're down to 54% people working, I don't know if I want to see what this place looks like, Carl. Do you?
They'll have been a full-on revolt, if not a civil war, long before we get there.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going the right way here.
This is the fundamental problem, Chief. And I rail about this in the healthcare area, but it's not just in healthcare; it's all over the place. It's just the reason that I raise such a stink about it in healthcare is because it's such a huge part of the economy as a whole. It's 20% of every dollar that's spent in the United States is spent there. So it has the biggest impact is there. But the bottom line is that if I can do something and make you pay the check,
make it someone else pay, and someone other than me pay the check.
You mean like electric car manufacturers?
Electric car manufacturers. You know, or like solar panel and battery storage manufacturers. You know, that's actually what got Musk all exercised. It was
you don't know that. He's so far out on the spectrum, you don't know how he thinks.
Well, actually I do know that because he specifically stated that's why he was pissed. Well, and by the way, what he's pissed about, because I actually read the bill, okay? You know,
I get it.
Funny thing, you can use a pair of eyeballs in your brain, right? What he was pissed about isn't even that he said it was about this excise tax that's in there. The excise tax only applies if you source the components from China.
Well, whatever.
By the way, he says he's building this stuff here in the United States. He's lying.
He
doesn't get hit by it.
The point is, he did this stuff for Trump.
Stuff for himself.
Okay. He went into the Doge thing, and he did this stuff. And Trump is becoming the new Ronald Reagan, where no matter what happens, it's not his fault. In his own mind and other people's mind.
Oh, I know.
And so Musk takes the heavy hit for going in and firing people, and not Trump. So people are keying his cars. I mean, the guy's name's being dragged through the mud, and all of a sudden he's like, then we see his bill come through, and all the money he saved is flowing right back out again. So there is some logic to
the logic is that he did this thinking he was going to keep all the subsidies
even he has to know that God bless you. I can't fire enough people to make up for the $7,500 I give somebody for buying my car. Even he has to know that. He's not a dumb man.
You know what? When you get this is to a large degree, like I said, it's, you know, the healthcare area is where it's the biggest, but it's not the only place. Yes, Chief, you can get so inured to this.
Yeah,
so
I guess you can.
I deserve it. It's mine. F you. Okay.
Well, look at how many people.
It's mine.
Just to flip to another topic, and it was always an interesting one of mine. The people who have been getting this carry interest deduction, for all these years, they absolutely think they deserve it.
Oh yeah.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, if let's put it this way, I manage money for people. Everybody knows that. We either do it if you want, you know, and we're doing. Just help me out with your stuff. We just do regular commissions on people. And by the way, we don't charge that much. So it's a lot of people really like it that way. Sometimes we help. Sometimes we do the trade. Sometimes they do. Depending on everybody's different, right? So I can't be a Fisher investment and say I'm doing the same thing for everybody because I'm not doing different stuff for everybody. or we can get paid if you want. We can get paid by a fee because we're an investment advisor as well.
Right.
Everybody's different. But if the carry interest is if I actually ran a hedge fund, which I have on a couple of occasions, if I'm a hedge fund, I might charge, I guess I could charge 1% and 20% of the profits. That's what hedge funds do.
Right.
And so, but the thing of it is, really, if I make $1 million, which would be great, and I get $200,000, most people would say, okay, you got paid for making $1 million. But no, you got to go further than that. If out of the million I make, half of it is capital, long-term capital gain, I think I deserve that half of my bonus should be long-term capital gain when it has nothing to do with it.
But if
that's the way it's been for 30 years, I'm gonna feel I deserve it, right?
Well, yeah. But Chief, this is the same. You know, it's the same sort of thing. Okay, it's that. And this kind of corruption, I mean, it's the same sort of nonsense that, you know, Kennedy had this long sit down with Tucker Carlson. I watched a good part of it. I had a friend of mine send it to me. You have to watch this. Look at all this new stuff. And I said, I've been talking about this for 25 years. You know, I got about halfway through it. I'm like, I haven't heard a single new thing yet. Right?
Nothing's changed.
But, what's changed is that we actually have somebody at HHS that's talking about it. I mean, that's changed.
Well, but how is it I have two of the brighter people, and I certainly include you in that, two of the brighter people I know are Hal and my brother Dan. And Dan's the president of PTI. I mean, everybody in the world should have a brother like him. But, of course, we don't agree on anything. But that goes with the territory.
No, that's okay.
That's okay. But they both will sit there, and if I could never drive to Seattle with the two of them in the car together. Because they'd be all over me on this value tax, or value-added tax, and how it would solve all our problems. And both of them, I don't think either one of them have the same insidious view of the world that I do. Where I'm like, guys, whoever has the chutzpah and the balls and the power to turn this tax code into something their way, somebody will find a way that you two haven't even thought of yet to somehow screw with the value-added tax, or they're going to do fine with that.
You know, it's what I always find interesting about this, and it's the insidious nature of this, and it is, you know, you heard this thing long, long time ago, before any of us were around. The claim was made that democracy, you know, representative government, if you will, can never exist in the long term because eventually somebody figures out that they can vote themselves a paycheck.
Which has happened here dramatically over the last 20 years, for sure.
Do you think?
Yeah.
So as soon as that happens, you start a downward spiral that inevitably ends in the destruction of the government. And most of the time, you either get an Austrian painter or some other kind of civil war. You know, something really bad happens, right? And the further down the hole you go, the more desperate the people become to continue the growth pattern. And this is the insidious nature.
Where do you
of
put
it.
Us? I put us in about the fourth inning of that.
Oh, no, I think we're a lot further down the
hole. You think
we're
fifth
than
or sixth? Okay.
Well, the problem, Chief, the problem with it is, and where people underestimate this, and they think, well, you know, we've got time to turn this around, we could do this. I wrote an article it's entitled What You Simply Must Understand. I think I sent it to the list last week sometime. And it postulates a lily pad, pond, okay, that is 4,000 square feet of space on the top. You got fish in the pond, and you have some lilies that get into there. Now, the lilies, of course, are, to begin with, they're good because they produce oxygen, which the fish need. They also consume the urea that the fish excrete, so they're cleaning up the water at the same time. They're making it's a symbiotic relationship. The problem is they're extremely prolific, and they double every few days. Well, at what point do you realize that if you don't kill them all and you don't stop their growth, you're all going to die? And the answer is by the time that you get to 12.5% coverage, which does not sound like much, right? I mean, everywhere you look, you see sun, everything's fine. You're only a few days away from being dead. Because if you reach full coverage, sun gets cut off underneath, the oxygen cuts off, everyone dies, all right? We are, and this is the nature of exponents. They always work this way. It doesn't matter what the system is. It doesn't matter what you're dealing with. As soon as you start doing things like, as soon as you baseline something, you say, well, my earnings this year were $1 million. I had 6% growth. I need 6% growth next year. Well, 6% isn't from the old base. It's from the million. Okay?
Yep.
And then the next year, it's 6% on $1.6 million. And so as soon as you let that mentality take hold anywhere where there is no free market pushback on it, so you start putting it into the tax code, you start putting it into entitlements, you start putting it into these kinds of, as soon as you do that, you're doomed. And we have gone down that route. We are now at the point.
Carl, why do you think we've, is this, I mentioned it earlier, and again, this has nothing to do with Hitler. This has to do with an economic system. I mean, why do you think we in a lot of countries seem to be drawn, you know, like to a, you know, like to the tree in the Garden of Eden. We get drawn to this fascist economic system.
We get drawn there, Chief, because everybody loves the concept, even though it's, you know, wouldn't you love to have free energy?
No. What I'm saying is that we end up in this spot where.
No, but this is how it happens.
I know, but we end up where we have three and four businesses. I rail all the time about the way Trump is going about doing stuff and what he's. But if You know, and I don't think anybody, nobody wants to put themselves in the White House or anything, because God knows I wouldn't want to be. Every time, you know, every day I feel less and less like I want to be anywhere near be the person, Carl, because I'm getting a better and better feel as much as I talk to all you guys on the show and I talk to people elsewhere and clients, and they're really pretty bright. I'm getting a way better feel about what has to happen to essentially straighten us out. And boy, oh boy, I don't want to be that person. In some ways, I would make Trump out to be a baby at this. I wouldn't be doing the crap he's doing by going after, you know, people didn't even know they were our victim, that were supposed to hate him. I would be doing the same thing with some of these industries. And, well, you know, and I don't see how the hell I could do that without getting shot. And by the way, I can't even imagine that fight. Well, I mean, he's going at stuff that, I mean, whether he throws the Polish cleaning lady out of this country or not, I don't give a crap. Now, when I know people are paying $8,000 for a prescription that costs $200 to make, that's a problem to me.
Here's the thing, Chief. The reason you're paying $8,000 for something that costs $200 to make is that the person who gets the $8,000 prescription doesn't get the bill.
Yeah, okay? They do.
Now, no, they don't. That's not what they perceive. Yes, they get it because their income gets screwed, their job gets screwed.
No. Fortunately, you're not in this thing about and I'm not giving you crap here. You're not on Medicare. You're not old enough. You're in good shape. And by the way, you got some dough. The way the people on Medicare with the prescription drug program are paying through the nose, Carl. At the end of the year, they end up paying half. It has nothing to do with them getting something that somebody else is paying
for.
No.
You're entirely missing the point. Okay. It is. Yes, you're right. The person who is on it, you know, by the way, it's not that long before I'm going to have to put up with the Medicare thing, like it or not, because I will turn 65, right? And when I do, you can opt out of it, but it's the dumbest thing you could ever do, because, boy, you want to talk about getting a shaft up your back door.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, my mother, by accident, when my dad passed, didn't realize that she had to reset things because he wasn't part of it anymore. Because they were married, right? Well, there was like a 4-month gap where she was off it on Advantage, and she got penalized for the rest of her life, and it wasn't small. It was like $200 a month, and it was a permanent penalty that there was no way to get rid of. And she didn't use any medical care during that period of time.
Well, there's some logic to that.
I understand that, but the point is that.
Okay, wait a minute. Can I explain what you're talking about?
She wasn't trying to game it, though. Chief.
I know. I understand. Here's what Carol's talking about. If you get to be 65, and I have a bunch of friends that all they do is tell me about their Medicare stuff. If you get to be 65 and you don't pick up, say you're healthy as a horse, young horse, and you don't have any prescription drugs, and you don't sign up for, what is it, Medicare Part D? Is that the prescription? Whatever.
Well, there's actually several.
Oh, no, but Part D is the prescription. So right. If you decide all of a sudden you're 70, you're 69, and all of a sudden, you know, you got something wrong with you, and they give you a couple of meds, and you go, wait a minute, I better sign up for Medicare Part D. They're going to say, hey, bleep, where were you for 4 years when we're all supposed to be in this together? By the way, you're going to get fined $10 a month for the rest of your life for not being here early enough.
Well, except it's not $10 a month.
The Part D is.
Well, Part D might be. Yeah. She was doing Advantage, so it was all rolled up into one.
But it's akin to never having any health insurance, and all of a sudden you get diagnosed with something and walking in and signing up the next day.
But Chief, can we stop talking about this, that it's insurance? It's
what?
Insurance. It's not insurance.
I understand that.
All right, so here's... So
it doesn't matter what it is. If the costs are too high, somebody's paying it, right?
Point being, the perversion of language, calling something what it's not, all right, leads to these kinds of distortions. And then as soon as you do this, as soon as you let someone do this and send someone else your bill,
let me interpret what Carl's saying for people who don't know the vernacular. Insurance, by most people's definition, Carl, I hope you agree with me, is out of 1,000 people, one guy might have a fire. We don't know who the guy is. So, but we're all going to put money in a pot. So if somebody's house goes down, that's insurance. That's not the same as we all know we're going to have these medical problems. They're too damn high. And we somehow or another, we're going to have a third-party payer system that is there all the time. Not like there's a fire every hour, right? It's a whole different program.
Well, exactly, because if you took if you bought fire insurance when your house was on fire, it would cost more than just buying the repairs to the
right.
house. Because the guy in the middle has to eat.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there is, and the problem is, once you get into this shift the bill to someone else, all the basic economic laws go out the window. Because if I can make you pay my bar bill, I all of a sudden develop a really strong taste for single malt scotches at $40 a shot. And what's even worse is that 5 minutes after that happens, the waitress, the bar owner, the liquor distributor, the guy that's making the scotch, they all are going to fight like hell to not allow that to ever go away.
Oh, sure.
Because they all do, because now the waitress is living in a $400,000 house instead of a crappy $1,000 a month apartment, right? And that's, and this is what we've done incrementally. We went from 4% of GDP spent on healthcare across the entire economy in the United States to 20. We multiplied it by 5.
Well, a lot of this has to do with...
And we don't get better outcomes.
This is
it's
how...
It's not just in drugs.
We only got a couple of minutes, but we'll talk about the rest on Tuesday, but... Here's what has also happened, which Carl doesn't bring up really as much as he should. How's that for a shot, buddy? You used to, if you had a business, if PTI had 300 employees, and I know this because one of our first clients here at PTI was a guy from, he was from Phoenix and big developer, but he used to be from Columbus, Indiana, where he had a factory. I don't know what the hell he made, Carl, but he had like 400 people working there. And he said that they decided to totally self-insure.
Right.
Where they brought a doctor on site, so you could, if you had something wrong, you get down there, and they weren't there to like treat you, but they look at you and go, you better go to the hospital, or you're okay.
Go, right.
Or you're okay, kind of thing. And they bought a... umbrella policy from Lloyd's or somebody,
yeah.
For and it's funny. You might be the only person in the world. What's the most dangerous thing to happen in terms of cost that could possibly happen to somebody in your plant, in terms of what costs you?
Oh, I don't know. We didn't have manufacturing, so I'm probably the.
Well, I shouldn't have said that. In any kind of place, it's if somebody has a baby that's messed up.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's way more expensive than even cancer or something else. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, because you're talking millions of dollars on a lifetime basis, and it could go on forever.
Yeah, so, but anyway, they bought, I don't know if they had a $5 million policy or whatever the hell they did, an umbrella type of thing, but anybody else, you went to the doctor, you just gave them the bill, and they paid it. And
right.
And people, you know, they didn't, but now the problem is, and you've talked eloquently at this, you can't do that because your price at the doctor or the hospital might be a third of, might be three times what an insurance company gets in their network. And there's no way you can, and that's where you talk about all the time. And I don't think people really understand how important that is. Where,
Chief, you need to understand that Obama did that.
It happened long before him.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did.
Excuse me. I raised a daughter. We had a cat policy after I left MCS. I bought that rather than Cobra, even though I could have taken the Cobra at least for a period of time.
Carl, the dude stopped doing it in 1994 because that's when this all started, long before Obama.
Chief, I understand that. And in the 1990s, I saw this exponential ramp starting with the health insurance costs. Is when I started screaming about it.
Okay, well, for those that are lost in the argument here. If you went in to get an appendectomy, and we paid for it, we paid it, PTI or this guy's firm, it was the same price as the insurance company. Then it got to the point where the appendectomy for us was $20,000, the insurance company was $5,000.
Right.
So even if you ask an insurance company, why somebody, you hear from once in a while, why somebody in Iowa does not sell insurance in Illinois. It's because they don't have the network.
Right. And here's the thing, though. That's a felony.
Well, sure it is.
And it's
well, it isn't until nobody cares if they come get you.
Well, but it was a felony and decided it was a felony at the Supreme Court in 1979.
We don't pay any attention to them.
Oh, well, you know, apparently not. But, no. But this is the thing. So, I mean, but even back in the early 2000s, before, you know, the reason I had the cap policy was exactly what you described.
Yeah.
Okay, what was going to happen to me if I ended up in the hospital, right?
Yeah.
However, I was able to take, when Sarah needed routine stuff, okay, we go to the same pediatrician's office, and the whole reason that all I bought was a cap policy was that it was half the price for me to whip out the checkbook as it was to put it through the insurance.
Well, that, and they say now, when every doctor has to be part of one of these groups, you can't do that.
That's all gone now. You can't do that anymore. But I'm just saying, I was, you know, I just did the basic math on this. I'm like, this is going to cost me, you know, a couple hundred dollars because, you know, she played sports.
Well,
and she
we got a dash here, but Carl, you're absolutely right. It's like, why should I? I get my teeth cleaned every 3 months. Not that anybody needs to know that. I just paid a guy. The last thing I need to do is to have a third person involved in there. Why would I? Just give the guy a check.
That's going to go away too because they're already doing that to people, and now all of a sudden it's $400 to go in there and sit in a chair for half an hour.
What do you got going for this weekend? Anything good? Are you running down the street in a parade? By the way, what town are you? Not that I want to come visit, but if I ever went south, I wouldn't mind catching a game with the Cubs Double A team. Where are they?
Oh, they're in Knoxville now.
Okay,
I'm southwest or southeast of there.
It's not like I'm crashing at your pad or anything. But if I did drive through, I'd like to go to a game or something.
Well, we could do that, there is a 5K race tonight in Knoxville. Right by the UT campus.
Is it going to be 100 degrees or?
Well, it's probably going to be nasty, stupid hot, but I'm going to do it. And then tomorrow, probably grill some steaks and shoot fireworks and that sort of thing.
Well, there you go. I unfortunately got to go do a funeral on Saturday.
Oh, God, that sucks.
Very nice lady, and she was with a daughter of somebody who owned this engineering firm that they did some huge projects here in Chicago. They did the Stickney water treatment plant part of that. And, and one of the guys who was the foreman there, she met and married the guy.
Well, there you go.
And the dude is from, I mentioned this the other day, the dude was born in a log cabin, I don't know, Kentucky or Tennessee or someplace like where you were down where you're living. The cabin is now part of a state park as something, a historical site. It was one of the original cabins from either one of the two, the Hatfields or the McCoys.
Oh, You know, the funny thing is, I have some people, somebody on my forum that apparently has a relative within there too.
Well, you know, I think
those families like to play at night because they don't have anything else to do.
Well, you know, if you ever watch, go on YouTube and watch the first episode of the Beverly Hillbillies. The house looks exactly like that house. No running water. I mean, maybe they had the pump on. You might have the pump on the sink, but no. No pooper inside. You had to go outside and everything for all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It looked exactly like that house. I go, how many people live in that place? He goes, like six. And I go, you got to be kidding me.
Well.
Different world, bud. Anyway, SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 80. I'd say the number was what would you say? It was non-committal?
I don't think it moved the needle, but you know, it's a holiday weekend, and so you know nobody wants to be short into a holiday weekend, right?
Yeah. All right. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks. Everybody have a happy 4th.
That's all, folks.